Are you going to be teaching kindergarten next year for the first time, or do you know someone who is? Teaching kindergarten for the first time can be overwhelming, and maybe you're feeling unsure of where to start. Well, look no further. I have the Ultimate Survival Guide for New Kindergarten Teachers. I created it based on all the things that you need to rock teaching kindergarten next year. All the things I wish I had known as a brand new kindergarten teacher. Get your mindset ready to tackle the challenges of kindergarten, learn how to set up your classroom for success, and master key strategies for teaching effectively. Plus, prepare for the first week of school like a pro. Don't miss out on this free guide, and please share it with your new teammates and friends who are moving to kindergarten next year. Get ready to embark on an incredible journey in kindergarten education with me as your virtual teammate cheering you on. Download the free guide today at www.kindergartencafe.org/new-teacher. That's kindergartencafe.org/new-teacher. Welcome to the kindergarten team. Hey, teacher friends. Today I am talking to one of my teacher friends from Instagram. Her name is Holly from Research and Play. I was super excited to meet her because we had never actually met, but we've been talking for years on Instagram. So I hope you enjoy. We're going to talk all about setting up the classroom, really thinking purposely about your space. And it's perfect for this time of year where we're rethinking our space, maybe thinking about reorganizing, all that kind of stuff as we dive into the end of the year. So hope you enjoy our conversation. You're listening to the Kindergarten Cafe Podcast, where kindergarten teachers come to learn classroom-tested tips and tricks and teaching ideas they can use in their classroom right away. I'm Zeba, creator and founder of Kindergarten Cafe, and I help kindergarten teachers with everything they need from arrival to dismissal in order to save time, work smarter, not harder, and support students with engaging and purposeful lessons. I'm here to cheer you on through your successes and breakthroughs and offer support and resources so you never have to feel stuck or alone. Ready to start saving time and reducing your stress, all while using effective and purposeful lessons that students love? Let's get started. Welcome, everyone. I have Holly here from Research and Play, and I'm really excited for her to join me on the podcast today. So welcome, Holly. Why don't you start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
All right. Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. I would love to tell you about myself. My name's Holly. I run Research and Play, which is an online platform for teachers covering mostly early childhood. As an educator myself, I have taught TK and kindergarten, and I served 1 year as an instructional coach outside of the classroom. So this is my 13th year in education.
Awesome. Well, and I've been following you for years on Instagram, so it's really exciting to actually meet you.
I know, right? We've been Instagram buddies for a really long time, back when I taught kindergarten.
Yeah. And now that you're doing TK, it's still fun to see all the, you know, stuff that comes before when the kids get to me, all the activities that you do with them.
Yeah, it's really cool having taught kindergarten for a long time and now going down to TK, just to see that evolution of the child and the way that their brain works and how they piece things together to more understand what they were like when they came to me in August. It's really been eye-opening. It's been really cool.
And TK is four-year-olds?
Yes. So they come to me as all four-year-olds, but they have to turn five by a certain date. And right now in California, that date is by the end of March. They have to turn five. So they'll go to kindergarten next.
So you have all five-year-olds now?
I do. Yeah, they're all five now.
Well, Holly, one of the things that I've loved following you on Instagram for is all the actual research. I mean, it's in your name, but the research that you bring into sharing with everyone on Instagram, the research behind why you do things. And one of the things that you talk a lot about is being very purposeful about your classroom. And so I'm excited for us to talk about that today, especially with the lens of teachers getting their classroom ready to close up for next year, think about what classroom changes they might have for next year, or just things like that. So I'll let you get started.
Okay. So that's definitely one of my most favorite things to share about on Instagram, just because I feel like when I have shared about it in the past, I've gotten so many questions, teachers wanting to either learn more or maybe have never heard of a certain subset of research that supports something. You know, classroom design is not something that I think is probably typically covered in a lot of educator prep programs. I was really fortunate that it was one of the main components of our educator program where I was in school. So I started learning about, for example, the Reggio approach as an undergrad. So this has just sort of been part of my teacher DNA, is always thinking about the classroom and what the classroom should do for children based on research and things that we know. So one of the things that I thought I could talk about today was how you look at your classroom and view it as child-centered. And I know that, you know, if you're listening and you're working with young children, you think, of course it's child-centered. Like, it's a kindergarten class, it's set up for kindergartners, or it's a TK class. But being child-centered is a little deeper than what the classroom looks like. It's how the classroom functions. Mm-hmm. And so when you're thinking about, is my classroom child-centered? It goes from things you have on the walls down to the type of instruction that you give. It's kind of a really big and deep topic we could get into, but sort of the main things I think teachers can think about when they're thinking about their space, and especially towards the end of the school year, you know, teachers are starting to wrap up and pack up, and maybe this is that time of the year where it's sparking, ooh, I might want to do this differently next year, or this area was not great this year, I want to change that, or I want to add something. One of the best things you can do to ask yourself if your space truly is child-centered is walking around your classroom, say, why do my students need this? What do they do here? And you can do that with big areas of your space and even really small areas like a shelf that you have supplies on. Just asking yourself, why do my students need this and what do they do here, can influence if that space is going to feel more child-centered or not. So for example, if you have an area of your classroom that has a bunch of your teacher stuff in it. So in my former classroom, I had sort of my corners, my teacher corner. I had like a whole rack of organizational tubs, like for my Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday activities. And then I had like another shelf below that with all these different flashcards and things I would pull out for warm-up activities. And it was just like my teacher corner. It was actually a really nice little corner of my classroom because there was an air duct vent that ran through it that was sort of at eye level for me. And I got to go observe a Reggio preschool. And I saw that they had a cozy spot for their children and they draped a sheet over it. And so it made it this very enclosed, cozy space. And I thought, oh my gosh, instead of that being my teacher corner with all my teacher organizational materials, I could take all that out, drape a sheet over that vent air duct. And this is a beautiful little cozy spot. Put little twinkly lights in there. So I did that. I did that during spring break one year is when I went to observe. So after spring break, I made all these changes and my students loved it. They utilized that space. It was so much better than the cozy spot we had before. It was definitely one of those moments where I realized, okay, this is a child-centered space now. I can figure out where else to put my stuff. And so as teachers are wrapping up, I think that it's really good to start thinking with that lens. Is this space really child-centered? And of course, you're the teacher. You need to have things in there to support you and your instruction. But if you're looking at it through this lens, it helps you decide, how can I be more purposeful with this space?
Well, and even looking around the room and at this time of year, like thinking about just one area too, of like, is there one area that I want to like rework or retweak? Because it could be daunting to think about the whole classroom too. And so like, this is a chance at the end of the year to really focus in and zoom in on one area and make changes now and see how the kids react to those changes before you go and do the whole classroom.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a really good tip. And when I initially started doing this after spring break, that was a really good learning tool for me to use, was the students I had currently, because they were, you know, older kindergartners at that point. They did not mind like telling me their opinions on things or something worked or didn't work. And so it sort of became a little lab, a little learning lab. So I think that's a great tip. Focus in on one space that you thought was either underutilized or could be utilized in a different way to be more child-centered.
I'm like having like a little inner turmoil though, because the thought, I have those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday bins. And I'm like, you want me to get rid of my bins?
I know. I didn't get rid of my bins. I just moved them. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate. I know teachers' storage is like controversial because some teachers have tons of storage in their room. Some teachers have none. But I just got really organized inside my cabinets that I had and put them in the cabinets because the kiddos didn't need to open the cabinets or anything. So I would suggest that. Or if something is just at a higher level that they can't actually reach, put your stuff up there.
I am in one of those rooms that has no storage. And then we go in the same district. We'll go and visit other classrooms for professional development. And they have just cabinets on cabinets on cabinets of just endless storage. And they have closets on top of it. And I'm like, this is so not fair. And then, you know, well, to be at professional developments, and they'll be like, yep, everyone can just store all these boxes of things. And I'm like, excuse me.
Where?
No.
Where?
But I do think for me, because I got shuffled around a lot and I just was like shoving things in closets and cabinets that I do have, which is not that much. But that is a good focus for me this summer or this end of school year, is reorganizing those, because those, like you said, the kids don't need to access, open the cabinets. That's a perfect spot for me to put my stuff, so that the areas that they can reach and have access to are more for them.
Totally. Yeah. That sort of actually leads me into the second thing I was wanting to talk about, was all of the stuff that we have as teachers, all the things that we've accumulated over the years for very purposeful reasons or for more materialistic reasons. Teachers have a lot of stuff. We can have a lot of stuff. And so one thing that I like to challenge teachers that I work with is to shift from decorating your classroom to designing your classroom. When I finally realized that myself, that was a huge aha moment for me, because even with a background in classroom environment and knowing about Reggio and Montessori spaces, I still got very caught up early in my teaching career, going to Lakeshore and these other, you know, parent teacher store. I was in the South and we had the parent teacher store, and buying all the borders and all the calendars and like all the matching sets, you know? And so I had all this stuff. I thought I needed that in my first classroom. It hadn't been used as a classroom before, so I was getting to put everything up for the first time. I got all of that up and I realized, well, this is just a lot of stuff. And what if I change my mind next year and I don't like this anymore? Like, I've just wasted so much money buying all this stuff. And so over the years, I've moved states twice. And so when you move out of state, you're bringing your whole classroom with you and it forces you to pare down. So at this point, I have very little left because I've either left it behind or just given it away. But as you are doing this end of year pack up, planning for next year, another thing to consider is, as I go into the summer, I need to be the designer of my classroom, not the decorator. And one of the biggest things that I think teachers can realize when they do that is, what am I putting up in this room? What am I putting out that's just for looks? Because I think it looks good, or I think that it's supposed to be there because all early childhood classrooms should have that, right? Or when we get sucked in by things that are shared on social media, teachers buying over the summer, we think, oh, that's so cute. I want that. I need that. But if you are designing your classroom space and you are thinking from a child-centered mentality, all you have to do when you're tempted by those things is just ask, how does this serve my students? And if it doesn't, or if it doesn't serve them in a way that's meaningful or long lasting, then don't worry about spending your money on it. So this approach is great for your classroom because it makes sure that it's centered totally around your students and less around you. But it also saves you money because it takes that temptation away. And one thing that I like to challenge teachers to do is just to think of it in terms of, if you want to bring something into your space, or you go back in August and you're back in your space and you have that first day back, you know, when you're just standing in the middle of the room with your hands on your hips, like, where do I start? Then one thing that you can ask yourself when you start pulling those things out of your cabinets and out for storage is just say, do my students need this? How will they use it and how often? And if it's not something your students need, I'm talking all the way down to like a border on your bulletin board. My students don't need this. I don't have to put this up. And I've seen their Reggio Inspire teachers share that they let their students create the border. They just give them blank sentence strips. And I was like, how much sweeter is that? That it's their own, you know, pictures and design. So stop putting up border. And so as you're starting to pull things back out, just thinking about, I need to design this space and I need to ask myself, do I need this and how they use it? If you are interested in Reggio at all, or if you're just interested in a more child-centered environment, then it'll help you to ask yourself these questions and even challenge yourself to not purchase things or not put out things that maybe you typically would have before.
Yeah, I think I want to push myself to that child-centered, like having them decorate. But for me, I'm like, I've had these decorations up that I don't buy new ones every year. Because my big thing is like, stick with like neutral, a simple theme, like of colors. Just go with the color basis so that you don't have to change it every year. Because I was like you, that teacher, first year teacher, going to Lakeshore, and I bought like Pete the Cat everything because I loved Pete the Cat. And then I got so sick and tired of Pete the Cat before the year was over that I had to go buy all new stuff. But I do love the look of, you know, you've shared like the board, what the borders look like when your kids are creating it. And I do love seeing that. So I'm like wanting to make that push for myself.
Totally. And like one thing that I think has overwhelmed teachers that I've talked about this with is, what does that mean? Do I like throw out everything that I have? This feels more overwhelming now because I'm starting really from scratch if the kids are making things and co-creating the space with me. But it's actually, it's worth it because when you sort of set up your classroom as a blank canvas, you don't put a lot of stuff on the walls, you don't put a lot of stuff out, and your students come in, that is one of the very first ways you're going to build community with them. You're going to have a meeting, you know, in the first week of school and say, did you notice we don't have any letters on the wall? Isn't that crazy? We need the alphabet on the wall so that we can learn letters. And did you also notice there are no numbers, but we're supposed to learn how to count and all these other things, and say, that's because you just moved into this classroom. As you're teaching letters, you can put up the alphabet cards. And as you're focusing on numbers, you can put up the numbers for the number line. I didn't get my number line finished in kindergarten until October because we introduced numbers one at a time, focus on number sense. And every time we finished a number, we made the poster for it. So,
well, and that's so much more meaningful to them because it's the purpose behind why is this on the wall? This is on the wall because we learned this and it's now a tool to help you remember what we learn. And something I talk a lot about is if something's going on your walls, there has to be a purpose because otherwise it's just, it becomes blank space to the kids at a certain point because they just stop looking at it. And it's too busy. If you have too much stuff on your walls, it's too busy. It's distracting. And it actually gets in the way of them learning.
Yeah, no, that can be a real consideration because I think something that people may or may not consider is the visual clutter of a space. And you can think about it in terms of your own home. You know, some people have different tolerance for, you know, things being out or things being put away. But think about your home, like if you're sitting in your living room versus if you were sitting in your classroom, how much of a difference it would be, quote unquote, visual clutter wise, because young children are having to process their environment. And when there are a lot of things hanging up around them to process, it can be visually overstimulating. It could just be tricky for them to actually find the resource on the wall that they need. And so that's why I think, you know, and still thinking about designing the space also means you're going to rotate some things. Things can hang up for a while and then they come down when their purpose is no longer, you know, needed in the classroom.
Absolutely. Holly, you've mentioned a few times Reggio Inspired, and I'm wondering if you could explain that a little bit in case people don't know what that means. Yeah, I'd love to know what that means for you.
Okay. So again, this could be a 2-hour episode because there's so much that we can learn from this approach. So the Reggio approach is something that started in Italy decades ago in Reggio Emilia, Italy. And it's since, you know, permeated throughout schools across the United States. You'll find it in private schools, public schools. You'll find it in a lot of preschools. But you'll also find the Reggio influence in traditional classrooms in public school with teachers who are knowledgeable about the approach. And so when you hear that a teacher is Reggio inspired or their classroom is Reggio inspired, what that means is that that teacher is considering some of the main tenets of the Reggio approach. That first one to consider is the role of the environment. And so when you're thinking about the Reggio approach, the environment that children interact within should be provoking, it should be inviting, it should spark curiosity, it should be set up in ways that support the children that are currently in it. So that might mean that this group needs something different from the next group. And so the space should be fluid and move and change with the children's needs. You would see a lot of documentation hanging up in a Reggio classroom. So in a Reggio-inspired classroom, you might see some learning walls or some documentation panels with pictures from different studies or projects that the children have done. You would see student work that gets rotated frequently that's not curated by teachers. You would just see documentation of children learning, proof of children learning. And it also means that the environment is there to support the children, and so it shouldn't distract them. So you'll see a lot of natural colors, neutral colors, a lot of natural materials like wood or wicker and even glass, because all of those things too, not only do they provide a more neutral canvas for the children to be center stage, but they also can provoke conversations about responsibility and taking care of materials, because when the things that they have are more fragile or things that they'd experience in the real world, it starts teaching them that they can be responsible for those things too. So that's the environment. And then two of the other things to consider if someone is Reggio inspired, is to consider the role of the teacher and the role of the parent. And specifically, the role of the teacher is one of facilitator. So in a Reggio classroom, it would be hard to spot a teacher because they are most often down at student level. So they're squatting down, sitting down on the floor. They're with the students alongside of them. You'll often find teachers asking questions, getting more information from the child, just listening and observing. Whereas in a traditional classroom, we do those things, but it just doesn't happen as often. So to be Reggio inspired, you're trying to weave in opportunities throughout the day where you can just facilitate learning alongside your students. Of course, in any type of classroom, there is some explicit instruction that has to happen, right? Phonics instruction, things like that. But the majority of the time is spent in responsive, small group or individualized instruction. And then, of course, the role of the parent, making sure that parents are completely immersed in their students' learning so that they know what's happening. You give them language to talk with their children about their learning with. You invite them in often to sort of see the learning through the eyes of their children. And so it just takes that, you know, home connection piece and just strengthens it a little bit more.
That's awesome. That's very helpful. And I think to build on it a little bit, I don't know too much about it, but I know some basic Reggio Emilia stuff. But I think what I've heard is that they view the environment as another teacher. And so we've been talking a lot about that, but, you know, it just takes that whole like child-centered classroom to a whole another level of like the environment is doing part of the teaching too, and what you put out and what you and how you present it.
Absolutely. Yeah. The environment as a third teacher, the parent, the teacher, and the environment, all three influencing the child. So yeah, it's as simple as changing the way that you would, you know, put out morning work. I used to put out worksheets for my children to do in the mornings just to like review some things from the day before. And then I kind of switched to morning bins. And then when I became a TK teacher, I switched to like provocations, which is a Reggio term, or a term that you would hear, but it's putting out open-ended materials and just having a prompt, asking them a question. How can you create your home using these materials, and it's like different loose parts. And so it becomes extremely open-ended, but with sort of some guidance there. So yeah, environment as a third teacher is crucial in a Reggio-inspired classroom.
Can I ask you a logistical question about that? Because I've been experimenting a lot more with loose parts this year, and I love to put out prompts with it. So when I do play, it's in the morning when the kids are arriving. So arriving at different times, then I have out this beautiful, like you said, provocation with the prompt. And not everyone, especially at the beginning of the year, definitely cannot read my prompt. And I cannot always be there to tell them the prompt. So I'd love to hear, especially TK, they're definitely not reading the prompts, although I'm sure that you have a few that can. How do you handle that logistically?
Totally, because when I would set out provocations, it would also be at that arrival time. So they're trickling in. If one student makes their way over to that area first, I go over and meet with them and tell them what the prompt is. And the prompts are usually very simple, like what I said, how can you create your home? And so I tell them, if anyone else comes to join you, will you be able to tell them what to do here? And most of the time they can, if the prompt is really simple. And if not, then you just pop over and say, remember, how can you create your home? And then you walk away. Because part of those provocations is giving them that chance to just experiment. Be like, I don't really know what this is supposed to look like. And if you are hovering nearby, they want that guidance from you. But if you leave them be, then they have that chance for that productive struggle and to try to figure it out.
I love that. We'll probably have to do a whole other podcast on provocations. That sounds like a great topic to explore more with. But awesome. So Holly, I know that you have more resources if people want to learn more about taking the leap and being more child-centered in their classroom design, not decoration. I love that shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a simple resource that teachers could find and download that's going to get them off and running with this in August is a co-created bundle that I have in my Teachers Pay Teachers store of 5 of the biggest components that you could create with your students. So it's got all of your alphabet needs, your number line, it has supply labels, a calendar, a schedule. And so these are the things that you could work through at the beginning of the year creating with your students. And I created that resource to include lesson plans because that was the number one question teachers would ask when I would share, well, how did you do this? Did you do it in whole group, small group? When did you? So I broke it all down in different methods, ways that you could do these activities. So I think it's really helpful if you want to do that, but you're not quite sure where to start. That's a really good resource. And then if you want to dig a little deeper with me, I actually took all of these things that I talked about and dove much deeper and went into a lot more detail in a course that I designed called the Research-Based Space. And this course has 7 modules that teachers would work through. It's self-paced, and there are a couple lessons within each module. And it basically walks you through that very first mindset shift from decorator to designer. It walks you through all the different considerations that you can have for your classroom, gives you examples. And then finally, by the end, we're now talking about considering the type of instruction that you provide to be more child-centered and responsive. So shifting from whole group to small group and to rotations and what that looks like, I walk you through that too. And so that course is actually being redesigned. It has not been open for enrollment for 2 years because it's undergoing some big redesign. So it will be open in July for teachers to sign up.
That's awesome. That's perfect timing too for that summer refresh of the classroom. That's awesome. And I highly recommend following Holly because I always learn a lot when you post and I like seeing the ideas that you have out for your students. So how can they find you?
Thank you so much. So you can find me on Instagram. My handle is just Research and Play, all one word. And then if you want to read a little more, you can go to my website, researchandplay.com, but it is research-and-play.com.
And we'll have all the links down below for you. Well, thanks so much, Holly, for joining us. And yeah, I'd recommend following Holly.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for more information and resources, or just head straight to kindergartencafe.org for all the goodies.
If you liked this episode, the best ways to show your support are to subscribe, leave a review, or send it to a friend. I'll be back next week with even more kindergarten tips. See you then.